Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This morning, Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. The endorsement comes just days after Bernie Sanders issued a statement calling the Democratic Party platform the most progressive in history. Over the weekend in Orlando, Florida, Hillary Clinton's 90 members, Bernie Sanders' 72 members, and DNC representatives spent hours hashing out the details of what would end up in the final party's platform. Bernie Sanders campaigned hard and early to ensure progressive policies ended up in the platform. As a result, it includes an amendment to increase the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour, steps to break up large Wall Street banks, an end to the death penalty, criminal justice reforms, fracking regulations, and a pathway toward legalizing marijuana. Hillary Clinton and DNC appointees voted down opposition to the TPP trade deal and the settlements in the West Bank and Gaza. They also voted down single-payer health care. So today we're going to talk about the platform and its significance. Today we're joined by Bill McKibben, a Bernie Sanders appointee. He's founder of the grassroots climate movement 350.org. Bill has written a dozen books about the environment, including The End of Nature and Oil and Honey. And Bill spoke at this morning's endorsement. He joins us on the road from somewhere in New Hampshire. Hi, Bill. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be with you as always.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Jonathan Tessini, also a Bernie Sanders appointee and author of the book, The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. And Jonathan joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Rose.
Great to have you. We reached out to Hillary Clinton appointees Carol Browner, former head of the EPA, who now works at the lobbying firm Albright Stonebridge Group, and Paul Booth, executive assistant to the president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, but they were unavailable to join us. So, Bill McKibben, I want to start off with you because you were at this morning's endorsement of Hillary Clinton. And it was, I have to say, kind of strange in the beginning because Bernie Sanders basically gave his entire stump speech while Hillary Clinton was nodding her head and clapping next to him. Did you expect that? I sure didn't.
Well, I think that's what Bernie does. He's spent the entire campaign doing nothing but talk about issues. And so perhaps it was appropriate that that's what happened today, and then she gave her entire stump speech. So it was a long morning, I gotta say.
Yeah. Well, and also, Bill, is it safe to say that we probably wouldn't even be talking about this platform? It really doesn't get that much attention if it weren't for the Bernie Sanders movement really trying hard to put more progressive policies in the platform.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is, really the first time in living memory that the platform has actually mattered very much. And that's because it's the first time that there were two candidates with ideological differences, serious ideological differences, running for the nomination. Bernie is the first effective challenge to a kind of dominant neoliberal paradigm about things that we've yet had. And so there needed to be some way to reconcile these two wings of the Democratic Party in order to go after Donald Trump, and the platform was the way. And as Bernie's platform spokesman, Warren Gunnels, said over the weekend, Bernie got about 80 or 85% of what he wanted. That was his price. You know, last time around, Hillary Clinton's price for unity was Barack Obama has to pay off my campaign debts, you know. That's not what Bernie was interested in. He was interested, as he has been all along, in the issues. And that's why there's a not perfect, but remarkably strong platform that emerged from Orlando. And the good news for those of us who work, you know, like Jonathan and I, who work in movements more than we work in politics, is that that platform gives us a lot to work with once Hillary Clinton takes over. We have, you know, on paper, very strong words, and if they don't live up to them, those words won't be on paper. They'll be on banners and placards and everything else as we do our best to force the Clinton administration to live up to its words.
That is Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org. He's a Bernie Sanders appointee. He was at the event this morning where Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton. Sorry about his line, but Bill is now on the road. Jonathan, what are your thoughts? Is it safe to say that we wouldn't be talking about this if it weren't for Bernie Sanders and his movement?
There's no question about it. And I just, for a point of clarification, I was, unlike Bill, I was not an appointee to the actual platform committee. I have served as a national surrogate for Bernie because of the book I wrote, The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America, for the past year, actually. When as Bernie likes to joke, he was only 3% in the polls, and nobody thought this movement necessarily would go anywhere. And I think Bill is 100% right. The reason we're talking about this is twofold: the differences between the two visions of the two candidates, and because of the movements in the streets. And what we got in the platform was extraordinary. There's not been really a platform fight since 1988, when Jesse Jackson ran for president, and he wanted a number of things in the platform. We had a much broader agenda on climate change, and I know my good friend of many years, Bill, he's just the most immodest person probably on the planet, but, you know, it's largely because of the work of Bill on the platform, backed up by a movement that Bill has been part of, the environmental movement, that got us really an incredible step forward on trying to save this planet. And I agree with Bill 100% also. Now it's up to us to take what we won on economic inequality, on the climate change, on foreign policy, some of the things, frankly, we didn't win, and now we have to hold what will likely be the Clinton administration's feet to the fire. And frankly, I think this fight has just begun. The political revolution that we've been building, all of us, with Bernie as our, if you will, our chief organizer, we have to look at this now as the project for the next 6 months, the next year, the next 5 years, because, you know, just to be frank, the Democratic Party has a long way to go, and our first fight, I think, will be with the Democratic administration to stand on the things that are in that platform.
So, Jonathan, how significant is the platform?
Well, I think it's significant mainly in two ways. One is, I just said, it gives us something to say to the administration, to Democrats in Congress, to the public. This is what the Democratic Party has said it's going to stand for. But the platform is is not any better than the paper it's written on if you don't have a movement backing that up and forcing it, frankly, in the streets. Again, the reason we have this incredible climate change progress on paper is because there have been hundreds of thousands of people protesting it against the Keystone Pipeline, demanding action on climate change and a whole host of things. You know, Bill has been part of it, other leaders, but, you know, the regular people have been out in the streets. And to your second point about why it's important, I look at this as an organizing document, both in the things that we got and in the things we didn't get. So I want to take that to the 1,900 delegates that Bernie's going to have at the convention, and beyond that, back to those communities and say, here's what we won, here's what we have to organize to make sure it happens, and here's what we didn't win and why we have to fight for those things. For example, we have to defeat the Trans-Pacific Partnership, something the Clinton delegates would not accept strong language on. From my point of view, the horrendous refusal on the part of the Clinton delegates to support a resolution that supported the idea of giving humanitarian aid to rebuild Gaza, that went down in defeat. That's something we have to continue to push for. It's a good platform. There's a lot to work on, and this is really about the political revolution that will continue.
Jonathan Tessini is a national surrogate for Bernie Sanders and author of The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. Today, we are talking about what's in the Democratic Party platform. Bernie Sanders calls it the most progressive in history. And this morning, he endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. We're also joined by Bill McKibben. He is a Bernie Sanders appointee, founder of 350.org. And Bill was at the endorsement event this morning. Bill is on the road. Hopefully, his line will improve a bit. Bill, why don't we talk with you? Hopefully we won't lose you. So let's dive in and talk about the fracking ban. First off, give people a sense of what happens at this platform committee. Did the Bernie Sanders contingent all vote together? Were you told how to vote? And then the same goes for the Hillary Clinton contingent. Again, we did invite two Hillary Clinton appointees, but they were not able to join us. Can you just give us a sense of what goes on behind the scenes? How much?
Sure. It was the first time for me doing any of this, probably the last time, too. And it was interesting. It was a long process. I was actually on the 15-member platform drafting committee. So Bernie appointed 5 members and Hillary 6, and the DNC appointed 4. And we had an endless series of hearings with 140 witnesses that we listened to. And then we had a lot of drafting sessions where we tried to change the platform or tried to shape the platform. We lost most of the things we were trying to get in that drafting committee, mostly on 7-6 votes. Then last weekend, this much larger group, not the drafting committee, but the full platform committee, 180-some people, were in Orlando. And there, you know, with things really down to the wire, the bargaining got more intense. The Hillary people understood that they needed unity, they needed support out of Bernie Sanders, and Bernie Sanders, bless his heart, stuck strong. You know, there had been an immense amount of pressure on him to get out of the race weeks ago. Last week, the many of the members of the House Democratic Caucus and the House Representatives booed the guy, even though he was, you know, probably the most popular politician in the country this year. They booed him because he wasn't getting out fast enough. Because he didn't get out fast enough, we had real bargaining power, and that's what we were able to use in thing after thing. So I was working on climate and energy. 4 years ago, the Democratic Party platform called for all of the above energy strategy. It was heavy on the idea that natural gas was the future. This time around, the platform says specifically that sun and wind will be prioritized over natural gas going forward. This time around, the platform says that the test that we were able to pretty much force the president to use in deciding the Keystone Pipeline, whether a given project would significantly exacerbate global warming, would be the test going forward, not for pipelines, for every bit of federal policy. For the very first time, a party platform talks about pricing carbon, though it's not particularly specific about how that would happen. This is a remarkable change on things around energy and climate. We didn't win everything. We weren't able to get a fracking ban because the Clinton people voted en masse against the ban on fracking. But that was probably in that realm the one big thing we lost. And today, when they were, you know, I got to introduce Bernie when he announced for president a year ago, and I got to introduce him today at the end of his sort of active campaign. There were lots and lots of cheers for lots of things, but the biggest cheer the whole day, all through the room from both the Hillary and the Bernie people, was for the platform. Which, if you think about it, it's kind of amazing. We're for once not in a personality-driven political world, at least on the Democratic side. We're in an issue-driven political world, and that's really, really important.
Bill, it was interesting to watch Hillary Clinton's appointees, including Carol Browner, former head of the EPA, vote down the fracking ban. Did they have to say why they voted against it?
They did. They didn't say a lot, but they made clear that they thought that it was, people make no particular argument about it except that they were worried it would do them political damage. I think that they're wrong about that. I think they've made a mistake, just as they made a mistake in the TPP trade agreement. And I fear, I think that Trump's going to lose, but I think his best shot, and I think he'll take it, is going to be to run to Hillary's left on trade.
Right.
And I think that those two things were mistakes, political mistakes and practical mistakes. I will say that today, as she was speaking, Hillary said that there would be no TPP, and she couldn't have been firmer about it. So I don't know why the hell they're not talking about it in the platform, except that they said that they didn't want to embarrass President Obama. Hmm. That strikes me as, you know, the guy's a big guy. I mean, he probably can deal with a little bit of embarrassment. It would be the worst thing that ever happened to him.
Well, Bill, we know you're in traffic, so we're going to let you go. But when you're, right. We'd love to get you into a studio in the next couple of weeks to talk more about all of this.
Thank you for bearing with the bad sound quality. We're stuck in a traffic jam here of Democrats. They're unified about everything, and they're stuck in traffic. So there you go.
All right. Well, thank you, Bill. That's Bill McKibben. He is a Bernie Sanders appointee on the Democratic Party Platform Committee, founder of 350.org. He spoke at this morning's event. Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton for president just days after he issued a statement calling the Democratic Party platform the most progressive in history. And sticking with us for the rest of the hour is Jonathan Tessini, a national surrogate for Bernie and author of The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. We did reach out to two Hillary Clinton appointees, but they were not available to join us. Before we talk about the TPP, Jonathan, is there anything else you want to add about the fracking ban versus fracking regulations? So the fracking regulations actually made it into the platform. Can you elaborate on that? What does that mean exactly?
Well, I think to build on what Bill said, regulations mean that you can now take both the impact on the environment and carbon pricing and the package, if you will, and it's and the language that says we're going to preference wind and solar over natural gas, and you can see a path by which you can essentially stop or at least significantly limit additional natural gas wells, the whole fracking process proceeding forward. But I do think, to what I said before, all of that's going to have only happen if we continue to build this movement. Mm. Because clearly, people, as you say, Carol Browner and the others, in lockstep, voted against a complete ban on fracking. And they did that for, I want to reiterate and agree with my friend Bill, for stupid political reasons, not to mention morality. But it was foolish. But that reasserts to me on that and TPP that we have a lot of work to do. Let's be very clear about that.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Deal, which Public Citizen calls NAFTA on steroids. Now, at one time, Hillary Clinton called it the gold standard, and then she said she was against it. Jonathan, where do you think Hillary Clinton stands on the TPP today?
Well, let's see. I'm going to take the party line, if you will, no pun intended, I will take her at her word that she opposes the TPP. Now, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, has said and reassured his members, don't worry about this. This is just a position that Hillary Clinton needs to take in the primary. If she's the president of the United States, she will be with us on trade. And I think that Mr. Donahue, based on a track record, has a reasonable argument to make. Now, I've worked in this area of these so-called free trade agreements going back to NAFTA, you know, a quarter of a century trying to defeat these, and it is, TPP is NAFTA on steroids, as Global Trade Watch defined it, and I want to reassert again and reemphasize that the reason that Hillary Clinton had to go from saying that the TPP was the gold standard to opposing it in the primary, at least saying it, she does not like the current language, and she's opposing it, is all about a movement. The only reason she had to take that position is that she knew that if she supported the TPP and other positions that were not in sync with where the feelings and the passion of the progressive movement, the base of the Democratic Party, are today, which is quite populist, she could not win the nomination. I believe we would have won the nomination had she not essentially become someone she is not.
Hmm.
And so our task, and I say this to all the people listening who have been behind Bernie Sanders for a long time or in movements, our work has just begun. We because what happens after this election, I agree with Bill, I think it's more likely than not that Hillary Clinton will be the next president. We're going to have to hold their feet to the fire, and it's a little bit of a danger to take this position on the TPP, to not have a complete ban on it in the platform, precisely because, and I've written about this for several months, warned the Democrats about this, Donald Trump has been, and I'm laughing because it's hard to believe, he has been to the left of the Democratic Party on trade and trashing and criticizing NAFTA as a bad trade agreement.
Right. Well, and let's just quickly, we all throw out TPP, TPP. Well, what is it exactly? Because you have President Obama, when he was in Europe this week, he said that the left and the right are misleading people about the TPP. He says it has more strengths in there and more workers' rights, for example, than any other trade deal. According to Public Citizen, the TPP would make it easier for big corporations to ship even more jobs overseas, flood the country with unsafe imported food, ban Buy American policies, roll back Wall Street reforms, undermine human rights. I mean, those are just four of 10 things on the list. So can you just give us an overview of the TPP? Because we often talk about it but don't explain what it would actually do.
Okay, so essentially, it's like NAFTA, and I actually read NAFTA when it was passed, and unlike the theoretical idea of free trade, which you could write in three pieces of paper, and it goes back to a theory that a 19th century economist named David Ricardo came up with, you could drop all barriers, you could eliminate all trade rules, you could do it in two pages, but what this is, and what every single, what I call so-called free trade agreements are very carefully written rules. They're stacks of books that protect corporate rights, protect capital rights, protect investor rights. They're not about protecting people. They're not about protecting the environment. And so when I say that we are always for trade, it's true. We are for trade, but we're not for rules that are written that benefit corporations. So what these do is they protect investors. They protect, for example, drug companies, so drug companies can continue to keep their patents and charge outrageous prices. And it covers 12 countries, primarily in the Pacific, Vietnam, Malaysia, and some other countries. Australia is part of it. And it sets up essentially a trading regime that benefits corporations. The second point I quickly want to make, when you hear protections for the environment and workers' rights, they're phony. They're completely phony. And what I mean by phony, you cannot slap on as kind of an afterthought a bunch of regulations that claim to protect environment and labor on essentially an agreement that's about corporate rights. You can never enforce those. In the United States of America, in a country that has much more democratic tradition than some other countries where these trade agreements are enforced, in the U.S. we can't even protect workers' rights. We can't even protect people's ability to go to work and not be hurt on the job. How do we pretend like that can happen in other countries where you don't have that same regulation? It's totally phony.
What explains President Obama's very strong support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal at a time when 85% of House Democrats oppose it?
Well, I think you ask a fabulous question. I can't get into his mind, but look, all Democratic presidents, unfortunately, going back to Bill Clinton, remember, NAFTA would not have passed had Bill Clinton not pushed it through. It was actually signed by George Bush, but Bill Clinton could have stopped it. He pushed it through the Congress by essentially bribing a handful of members, and I mean bribing not in a legal sense, but giving them all sorts of benefits and legislation. He barely squeezed it through. That was a Democratic president, and all presidents, and I'll stick with Democrats, have supported this so-called free trade, partly because, for two reasons. One is, frankly, the corrupt nature of politics. This is where money flows into both parties from big corporations and very wealthy people who want these trade agreements because it benefits them. And second, with all respect to the president, you know, he's basically a centrist. He's not a left-winger or progressive on economics. He's basically been a centrist on these trade deals. That is his fundamental philosophy. So I don't think people should be entirely surprised by this.
And so the language in the platform basically would have said that Democrats should take strong opposition to the TPP, and that went down. Can you give us a sense of what happened during that vote?
Yeah, there were several. It was really interesting because what the other side did, the Clintons did, they had Lee Saunders, who's the president of AFSCME, come forward and offer an amendment which, on the face of it, seemed to be a good amendment on trade. And it talked about the need to have workers' rights and so on. And all we wanted was an amendment that had been, as Bill pointed out, had been voted down at the drafting committee, the 15-member drafting committee a number of weeks ago. We wanted one sentence that would say, thus, we oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's pretty close to that language. And they would not allow that language to pass. As Bill is correct, I think it had to do largely about not embarrassing the President of the United States, who actually can only pass this with Republican votes. It is a Republican piece of legislation, essentially. As you point out, a majority of the Democratic caucus in the House and the Senate, not to mention voters, oppose TPP.
Today we are talking about the Democratic Party platform. As you just heard, appointees voted down, Clinton and DNC appointees voted down opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And after the break, we will talk about other issues that made it into the platform, other issues that didn't. We're joined today by Jonathan Tessini, a national surrogate for Bernie Sanders and author of The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. We reached out to two Hillary Clinton appointees, but they were unavailable to join us. This is your call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @yourcallradio. Coming up in just a half an hour, it's BBC's World Have Your Say. They'll be talking about race and policing in the United States. Stay with us.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with journalist Sarah Short about her new play, The Box. It's based on years of conversations with people who have lived in solitary confinement. Short spent 410 days in solitary confinement in Iran, so this is a very personal issue for her. And her play explores the slow psychological violence rooted in isolation. I hope you can see this play. It's currently at Z Space in San Francisco. And then on Thursday, we'll be joined by Winona Howder, Executive Director of Food and Water Watch. She's out with a new book on it's called Fracopoly, and I'm sure she'll have a lot to say about the fracking ban that did not make it into the Democratic Party platform, but the fracking regulations that did. And we are talking about the Democratic Party platform. Bernie Sanders says it's the most progressive in history. He endorsed Hillary Clinton for president this morning, just a couple days after issuing a statement about the platform. And we're talking about this with Jonathan Tessini, author of The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. Jonathan is a national surrogate for Bernie Sanders. We reached out to Hillary Clinton appointees, two of them, but they could not join us today. And over the weekend in Orlando, this committee meeting took place. There were 90 Clinton members, 72 Sanders members, and also DNC representatives. And they spent many, many hours debating these issues. And if you'd like to join us, what are your thoughts on this platform? Do you think it is the most progressive platform? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jonathan, let's talk about a few of the other provisions and amendments that got into the platform that are not getting that much attention. Because of all of the police shootings that have been happening, I wanted to talk about this one, an amendment calling for investigations by the DOJ to investigate police-involved shootings did make it into the platform. Can you tell us about that and any other criminal justice reform commitments?
Yes, and I think that this is one area where, if I can say, there was a fair amount of unity on, if you will, from both factions. And I think both campaigns have been very influenced by the activism of Black Lives Matter, and I give them really all the credit for any of the advancements that have been made in the party politics and recognizing the violence against communities of color by the police. Bernie had campaigned and had a much more extensive agenda, which included sort of depolicing or taking some of the weaponry in the hands of some police departments and making them less look like occupying forces and making them look more like the communities that they police. That explicit language is not in the platform, but I do think that there is a recognition on the party, which will now have to be enforced as we move forward, as I said before, that something wrong is happening in the country when communities of color, particularly African Americans, cannot walk in the streets, drive their cars, and feel safe from the violence by police. And I think that, you know, that's now on the front burner. But again, we're only going to continue to make progress, and then if people continue to organize and demand that the country deal with that.
There's also language in the platform with a commitment to abolish the death penalty.
Yeah, that I think is pretty significant, particularly because Hillary Clinton has supported the death penalty
right.
throughout her political career. And so, again, I feel like I'm a broken record if people don't know what records are. It's astonishing that that's in the platform, but it will not matter if we now, months from now, don't demand that we, in fact, abolish the death penalty. We push that through Congress. We push that perhaps to have pushed that at the Supreme Court, that the death penalty finally be ruled as unconstitutional and inhumane. So that's going to take a lot of work, but that is a significant thing.
Yeah, that's very significant. Also significant, Bernie Sanders over the last year has been talking about a plan to ban private prisons, and that also made it into the platform.
Yes, that did. You're right. Bernie recognized that part of the crisis we face in the country when it comes to civil rights is that we have this prison industrial complex where, you know, in some way the tail wagging the dog or the driving force behind continued long sentences, the jailing of people for crimes they should not be jailed for years and years, has to do with the fact that we have a system that's privatized and making a huge amount of money. So we're profiting from people's agony and suffering in prison rather than trying to figure out alternative ways to deal with people who have committed crimes and how do you bring them back into society. And we're not talking, obviously, about people who are murdering people. We're talking about people who have done far less egregious things.
Right. And I hope you all can tune into our show tomorrow that's about solitary confinement. So, we have banning private prisons, abolishing the death penalty, asking... go ahead.
I was going to, you know, one thing that I think is a top one that we really push for and is really significant is the $15 an hour federal minimum wage. And you have to remember that Hillary Clinton opposed that
right.
during the campaign. She was only for $12 an hour minimum wage. So what Bernie Sanders did, so if we can sort of wrap this in a ribbon, by staying in this race, by refusing to knuckle under to the pressure from the Democratic establishment, including the President of the United States, to drop out and get some goodies for himself, Bernie Sanders is potentially, and this movement has potentially made it possible for people who are working for the minimum wage to make more money and actually have a living wage. Now, again, to repeat, we're not going to get there unless we continue to demand that and continue to mobilizing the streets, which really brought about this position of the campaign, frankly. We're not going to get there, but it's really extraordinary, and it says a lot, and obviously I'm a big fan of Bernie's, it says a lot about the integrity of the man, that he wanted to stand on these principles for the benefit of the people. You know, the difference between $12 an hour and $15 an hour is $3 an hour, which if you multiply that over a year, can mean the difference between barely getting by and maybe paying your bills a little more easily.
Well, and that's huge. And when the committee first met, Representative Keith Ellison introduced an amendment to tie the $15 minimum wage to inflation, and that went down the first time by the Clinton delegates or appointees. But didn't it pass at in this last weekend?
Yes, it did. And, you know, not to get so into the weeds, but in the, even the resolution, in my mind, was not as strong as I want it to be, because it said, and I'm quoting pretty closely, $15 an hour over time. And I believe what we really should have had in there was a time specific to say over the next 3 years or whatever people agreed to. Over time leaves this sort of funny room where, well, could that be 15 or 20 years?
Hmm.
And that's why I emphasize again, we need to be out there demanding that that happen now. We're not going to stand for this taking 10 or 15 or 20 years. People can't afford that. People are, you know, not surviving on the federal minimum wage. And $15 an hour is just the beginning, because actually, if you look at productivity and the productivity rises over the last 30 years, the minimum wage today should be about $20 an hour. So our sweat of the brow, all the hard work people put in, has been essentially robbed by big corporations, and we're not getting what we deserve based on how hard we've worked.
You make a great point, because when California Governor Jerry Brown signed our $15 minimum wage here in California just a couple of months ago, there were so many news stories, so much celebration, but I did not hear in hardly any of those pieces that that $15 will be implemented by the year 2022. So it's not like it goes into effect in a couple of months. We're talking 2022.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's my guess is, and I didn't follow the specific, you know, back and forth in the legislation. My guess is that's probably the best Brown thought he could get through your legislature.
Right.
But you're right, it's inadequate, and it's certainly inadequate compared to what it should be.
We're going to get to a call, a few calls in a minute. But Jonathan, I think your point about Bernie staying in the campaign at a time when so many Hillary supporters said, you know, you lost, get out, endorse her. So there's two other things that he got, not in the platform. And this is actually even more important than the platform, because Hillary Clinton is now supporting a public option. She is also now supporting free college tuition for families making $125,000 a year or less. And even 6 months ago, she and her supporters were just basically saying, there's no possible way you can do that. It's too expensive. We need to move incrementally.
If I can quote my candidate, Bernie, that's huge. Both of them are huge. Obviously, a public option is about as close as you're going to get to Medicare for all single payer, which is what we advocated for, and which is completely, I want to point out, the most economically sensible way to go, putting aside the immoral part that people can't get decent health care. So the fact that that is in the platform is a big step forward, as is college tuition. I mean, they were criticizing and trashing Bernie throughout the campaign. I mean, I used to get on TV and debate these Clinton people on CNN every day, practically, where they kept talking about, both when it came to health care, single payer, and to college tuition, that Bernie couldn't pay for it, even though on his website he kept getting very specific steps on how we would pay for both, not to mention his whole program. But they were attacking that left and right. And so it is a concession for that to be in the party platform.
And again, this is Hillary Clinton is now talking about these things. I mean, it's not just the party platform. She's actually saying she embraces these proposals. Single payer.
That's correct.
I'm sorry, not single payer, not there yet, but
nope.
the public option and free college tuition for families making $125,000 a year or less.
That's correct. And, you know, I'll say this. I think that's good politics, too. One of the things that fired up and powered Bernie's movement, our movement, is, number one, the support from young people. And I remember when people kept asking me, are people going to actually elect a Democratic socialist, a person who's proud to say he's a Democratic socialist? And I said, are you kidding me? Bernie goes into crowds, particularly young people, and he says proudly, which is a great thing about Bernie, he doesn't shy away from who he is. He says, I'm a Democratic socialist. And here's what that means. I want to give everybody here free college tuition and free health care. You know, all those people, they haven't heard any, they forget Democratic socialism. Nobody remembers that. They say, where can I sign up for free college tuition and free health care, like every other normal country in the advanced world?
The single payer amendment went down in the platform. It didn't make it into the platform.
That's correct.
Right. And why is that?
Well, why is that? Because the Clinton forces voted against it. They don't believe in it. They don't believe in the notion of a single-payer system. And, you know, I think that part of that has to do with the power of the drug companies and the healthcare industry. You know, let's face it, I'm sorry if I'm not in the unity mode 100%, but that the Clinton camp, the Clinton world, is rife and full of lobbyists for all sorts of industries, for oil and gas industries, and for the healthcare industry. And those people love the system they have now. And actually, they love Obamacare in a certain way because it's forcing people into the system that exists rather than create a system, again, like even like Australia, like most European countries, where there is no private profiteering health insurance industry. You have actually a single payer, which is the best efficiently run healthcare system. They just don't believe in it.
Hmm. Well, if you care about these issues here in California, Proposition 61 is the Drug Price Relief Act, and supporters say that this initiative would lower drug prices and increase transparency in the pharmaceutical industry. And you might want to start doing your homework because we've got 17 propositions on the state ballot alone. Again, this is the Drug Price Relief Act, Proposition 61, here in California. And we're talking today about the Democratic Party platform that Bernie Sanders is calling the most progressive in history, with Jonathan Ticini, author of The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. He's a national surrogate for Bernie. We did invite two of Hillary Clinton appointees to join us, but they were not available. And this morning, Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. And let's hear from Wade in San Francisco. Hi, Wade. Thank you for holding.
Hi. Good morning. And congratulations, Jonathan, on the campaign and the work on the platform. I'm wondering whether you believe that we can transform the Democratic Party into an activist organization that fights for its platform throughout the year. If Democrats elect leaders to the local parties who elect members of the Democratic National Committee who could mobilize people to focus on timely issues and reward Democratic office holders who support the platform and punish those who do not?
Well, I think you ask a fabulous question, and I can't say that this is going to be easy. And it's one reason I'm sympathetic to people who believe that we have to think about third-party options. I'm not there. I support those kinds of efforts. But I do believe that where the country is now and the way millions of people poured out to support Bernie in the Democratic primaries, that now what we have to do is essentially shake up the Democratic Party. There is a fellow named Tim Canova, who in Florida is running against the chair of the Democratic Party, Demi Wasserman Schultz. He's been endorsed by Bernie Sanders. So we're targeting the most high-level Democrats to take them out and to unelect them. And I'm now involved in something called Brand New Congress, which you can, there's a website, brandnewcongress.org, I believe it is. And that goal, the goal of that effort is to basically replace every single member of Congress, and certainly with people like us, and certainly those people who don't stand with this kind of agenda, this progressive agenda. It won't happen tomorrow. And even Bernie said that if he was elected president, we would have to have this political revolution where we had a Congress that was different. And honestly, the first fight is with the Democrats. Forget the Republicans, but it's with the Democrats. But it's a long struggle. It'll start at the local level. I encourage people. I think it's great if people want to run for their county commissions, their city councils, their local offices, because that's the way you build a base that then bubbles up and captures the Congress.
Well, thank you for calling in, Wade. Let's go next to Craig in Palo Alto. Hi, Craig.
Hello.
Hi.
Couple of things. I guess I'm a little bit cynical, and I just want to ask a couple of questions. I'm sorry about the feedback. Do you want me to turn my radio down?
Yes, please.
Just a second.
Craig is just turning his radio down.
Yes, he's turning his radio
down. Hi, Craig.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
Anyway, look, there was a 2012 Democratic platform. I have no idea how close Obama stuck to that platform. My guess is probably not very close. There may have been some progressive proposals in that platform. My guess is, and I'll be just honest with you, I don't trust Hillary Clinton. I was a Bernie Sanders supporter. I'm sorry he didn't wait until after the convention if he was going to support her to cast his lot with her. But I just don't understand what this platform really means, because once the president gets in there, like we saw with Obama, boy, a lot of us were incredibly disappointed. And here we are with Clinton. And the other point I'd like to make is that, you know, even if she gets elected, she's probably going to be facing a House and a Senate full of Republicans with the majorities. So I have no idea if this woman's going to go to the mat on any of these issues, and I'm pretty cynical about it.
Hmm. A lot of people are wondering that. What are your thoughts, Jonathan?
So I'll make three quick points. First is, Craig, I'm with you, my brother. I'm cautious. I don't know that I'm cynical, because I'm an eternal optimist. I'm cautious about this. And it's the reason throughout this program I've emphasized that the only way we're going to get anything done is if we build a movement. The reason this platform is semi-progressive and very progressive compared to the past is because of our movement, is because Democrats who did not want to adopt certain positions were forced to because people demanded. I mean, if we had not had a climate change position that we have now, 100,000 people would have shown up in Philadelphia and demanded. And I know that people were ready to mobilize those people. So they felt that threat. And you're absolutely right. Most presidents, there's not a single president in history that actually has walked into the Oval Office and said, please give me my party's platform. I now have to implement it. It is only us organizing to change it. I do look at this as a great organizing document. As I said earlier in the program, we can take this now to our delegates, the 1,900 Bernie Sanders delegates, back to communities and say, here's what we want, here's what we didn't win, now we've got to organize on that. We have no choice. Now, on your point about the Republican Congress, I think we'll probably recapture the Senate, meaning Democrats. That's my guess. I think the House is probably a steeper climb, although Donald Trump may open the door to that as well, because I do think that the Republicans are looking at potentially an annihilation at the polls, given Trump's penchant for alienating all sorts of groups and all sorts of people, and even in his own party. But there's no question that one of the threats that I think we will face is a President Clinton who will try to make deals that I think would be unconscionable with Republicans, and those are things we have to now be building to fight to stop.
We have a couple of emails. Hassan writes, it's important to note that the platform did not reflect Bernie Sanders' modest position on Palestine and his vow to treat the Palestinian people with respect and dignity. The DNC platform committee rejected Bernie's amendment to end the Israeli occupation and illegal settlements. Also, disappointing that my own Congresswoman, Barbara Lee, voted with the Hillary camp to defeat this very modest amendment. Jonathan, you were live tweeting when this went down. You tweeted that the HR Hillary delegates voted down a humanitarian Rebuild Gaza resolution. Tell us about that. And also, is it true that Congresswoman Barbara Lee voted with the Hillary camp on these issues?
And I also tweeted in that it was shameful and immoral.
Right.
And it was just an outrage. And I speak as, by the way, as a Jew who actually lived there and has been organizing around Palestinian rights for probably 30 years. So this was, I think, it is one of the great immoral stains on the Democratic Party that it continues to support the occupation indirectly or indirectly by supporting, you know, this right-wing government that Benjamin Netanyahu leads. But that's a historical problem. And I honestly don't remember how Barbara Lee voted, because there was a vote of all the delegates, and I didn't pay attention to the board on how every single person voted. If the email was referring to her vote on the drafting committee, I frankly don't know. And so I don't want to say one way or the other.
Okay. And is there anything else you want to tell us about Israel-Palestine? Cornel West, who was a Bernie appointee, gave a very passionate speech during the first meeting. He declined to even vote on the platform. He was very, very angry about the Israel-Palestine amendments going down.
Yeah, and you know, Cornell, my brother Cornell, we've worked together. He's an incredibly, he's just a moral man, and he abstained. He was one of the members on the drafting committee that Bernie had appointed, and he abstained at that stage. I don't know whether this past weekend where I was in Orlando as well. I don't know whether Cornell ultimately voted for the platform as a whole. And one of the things the email didn't mention was, I think I referenced this earlier, there was also an amendment calling for humanitarian aid to rebuild Gaza. Now, it's kind of astonishing to me that the Democratic platform, all the Hillary Clinton delegates, voted against the idea of simply trying to help Gaza, which still is in pieces, and where people don't have homes to live in, where people don't have decent water to drink, where they don't have jobs, that the platform Democrats would not say we have to provide humanitarian aid to Gaza. They voted against it. I find that to be just appalling.
And just to give people a sense, Hillary Clinton's appointees, Wendy Sherman, a former top State Department official, Neera Tanden, president of the Center for American Progress, Representative Luis Gutierrez of Illinois, Carol Browner, former director of the White House Office of Energy and Climate Policy, former head of the EPA, Ohio State Representative Alicia Reese, and Paul Booth of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union. We did invite two of them, but they declined. Did they mostly vote lockstep, Jonathan?
On the drafting committee, meaning, you know, that 15-member drafting committee that prepared the draft that we discussed this past weekend, I'm pretty sure the answer is yes. And when it came to the things they would simply vote down, I have to say they were quite organized, and they voted like it was like North Korea.
Hmm.
You know, they had their whips, and they were signaling with thumbs down, and virtually every proposal, and they had the numbers. It was rigged in that sense that proportionately their numbers were far higher than what Bernie's vote was in the primaries, particularly because the DNC members who were appointed by Debbie Wasserman Schultz were essentially Clinton votes, and they all voted, sometimes it was 100 votes or so, in lockstep on anything that Hillary Clinton did not want. There was a funny, I'll give you a funny example. There was a amendment to remove marijuana from the Schedule I list, meaning it would not be seen as punishable like heroin, right? And people actually, it passed by one vote, 81-80, and the Clinton people just freaked out because they had not really paid attention to that, and they were running around saying, Hillary doesn't support that. Hillary doesn't support that. And they tried to do all this maneuvering, and they finally basically conceded and gave up.
Hmm.
Just think about that. You know, making marijuana less than heroin, which the whole country is moving that way, they couldn't abide by that because Hillary Clinton doesn't support. I found that just amusing.
Hmm. Well, Jonathan Tessini, thank you so much for joining us. Jonathan is a Bernie delegate and author of The Essential Bernie Sanders and His Vision for America. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And we just got an email from Henry. Barbara Lee did, in fact, oppose the Sanders camp's proposal about the TPP and Palestine. Thanks for that email, Henry. And thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with journalist Sarah Shord about her new play, The Box. It's based on years of conversations with people who have lived in solitary confinement. In The Box, Shord, who spent 410 days in solitary in Iran, explores the slow psychological violence rooted in isolation. In the U.S., 100,000 people in state prisons are in solitary confinement. So what will it take to end this practice? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.